Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Well, Alex, we both wrote in our reports at pwtorch.com that we think that was the best Naomi match we have ever seen. This is an open challenge to anyone listening. What competes with that? 20 minutes, dramatic. They had the crowd in the palm of their hand. Credit to Naomi, credit to Charlotte, credit to the announcers and the crowd for reacting to everything. That was an unexpected standout main event women's title match, Alex.
Oh, I completely agree. That was pay-per-view quality. Or, I'm sorry, what am I supposed to call
premier
it now?
Live, premium live event.
Yeah, whatever.
Yes. Well, you asked.
I know, but after 25 years, I don't know if I can get used to that.
Oh, no, I totally know. Yep.
But, no, that was great. Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Like, Cole at the beginning said, oh, this is going to be there's a big match feel here tonight. And I was like, yeah, Cole didn't even sound convinced. And by the last 5 minutes of the match, I think Cole was like, whoa, I think he genuinely got into it. I mean, he can kind of just, rev up the engine of WWE speak and just, feign enthusiasm and do a suitable job, and there's times he has done this for a very long time that he's going to act more excited than he is and kind of go through the motions. I kind of think he got into this. I think he and Graves probably off camera were looking at each other like maybe you and I would be on screen like, whoa, this is good. This is way better than we thought.
No, I completely agree. It was interesting, too. I did like how before Cole had the line about this has a big fight feel, he did take the time to kind of roll through both of their accolades and accomplishments. Yep. And I do think that really adds something. It's kind of funny how they built that show tonight. My show hasn't aired yet. But what we talked about last night was one of your below the bottom lines from 30 years ago where you talked about building up main event matches. So it's kind of interesting the timing of this after I just had like a 20-minute conversation about it yesterday.
Oh, that's cool. I look forward to that. I've been listening to your show from last week, this week, and while I'm walking my dog and thinking about Flair and Savage and Hogan and Sid Justice and your theory on why that match took place because they had to have a babyface win the main event and all that. I'm looking forward to being reminded what I wrote about 30 years ago in the Pressing Torch newsletter.
Well, hopefully you're enjoying it so far.
Oh, yeah, you guys are great.
We're having a great time.
Oh, you can tell. I mean, I see that the minute count for how long you guys go, and I'm like, this is good. You guys are enjoying this, and just get wrapped up in all the things. Fascinating things are happening 30 years ago. It's an interesting time in the business pre Monday Night War. We'll detail what we're talking about in a couple minutes, and kind of talk about that new show on our lineup here. But let's. I want to talk a little bit more about the match, the main event match. We'll get into everything else on the show too. Afterwards. Sonya Deville came in, started gloating to Naomi that she lost, even though she was, outlawed or prevented from interfering in any way in this match, but Naomi still lost. And then Charlotte joined in a beatdown, and then Ronda Rousey came out. I think she might have almost tripped on the ramp. Did you catch that?
I did. again, I didn't mean to derail us there before with a cheap plug for myself.
Oh,
anyway.
No. Yep.
No, I did catch it, and I thought it was kind of funny. Because I looked up after the music, and then I went back to typing, and then I looked up again, and I saw her, sprinting and then, stutter for a second, and I was like, did she fall?
Oh, she almost had a Titus O'Neil moment live on Fox, and we should laugh. I mean, she could have gotten hurt, and, that would have ruined the angle and stuff, but, she's so intense, she's just the bull in the china shop type person and as she's charging out. But I mean, I thought this was a show where I wasn't honestly real excited to see more of Goldberg or Ronda Rousey. I'm not against special attractions, but, and Ronda's, a curiosity, she's kind of weird and she's super intense and unpredictable. And she wears her emotions on her sleeve and you never know what you're going to get with her. I mean, she's interesting in that way, but I don't know. And then Goldberg, I'm just kind of over it. And the fact that he's back for these, paydays. But I thought they did a really good job with Goldberg tonight, and unexpectedly so. And I thought this was the right way to use Ronda. You know, running out to the aid of a popular wrestler like Naomi, smiling, seeming like she's there to stop Naomi from getting a beatdown. It worked. She almost got the armbar on Sonya. Sonya's a good heel. I mean, I just thought when it came to Rousey, and we'll talk about Goldberg later in the show in more detail, but I thought that they booked this show well. In addition to having a really good main event, I thought there was some smart usage of talent that can sometimes things don't always go smoothly.
Yeah, I thought the way that they used Ronda at the end was great. I'm a big fan of, if you're going to have a badass babyface like that, make her that protector like you talked about.
Yeah.
The less she talks, the better, because she is such an awkward human being.
Right.
That it just, yep. it magnifies that when they ask her to talk and say more than like four or five things. It's a shame they can't find somebody like Heyman to pal around with her like they did with Lesnar, but that's a separate topic. As far as Goldberg goes, I loved those sit-down interviews tonight, and we'll talk more about that later. But I thought, in addition to Naomi having the best match I've ever seen from her, I think that was the best Goldberg promo I've seen in a very long time.
I mean, it might be the best ever, honestly. I mean, it's a low bar because it was just not his thing. You know, kind of like Ronda, Goldberg is really intense, and he can just lose himself. You know, he just gets ahead of himself and trips and then loses his place. And this wasn't that. You know what? It felt a little recited, especially Cole's questions. But I thought content-wise and delivery from Goldberg, it was good. And, you know, I think pre-recording it was smart.
I agree. I actually liked that they took Cole away from the announce desk to make it seem like those were live. I don't know if you noticed
yes.
that at all.
Yes, I did. Yep, because Graves is sitting, you know, center table, single chair after those. And I mean, I'm sure, I strongly suspect they weren't live, but boy, they sure made it seem like, you know, Tony Schiavone on Dynamite, you know, he walks away from the announce desk to go interview people. And that's what vibe they gave off here. So yeah, I'm with you. Again, we keep saying we'll talk about it later and then we talk about it. I want to give proper time to Goldberg later, but I'm not sure what's happening right now. They're taping next week's SmackDown now in New
Correct.
Orleans because
Correct.
They will be traveling to Saudi Arabia at this time for Elimination Chamber. So we didn't get an outside correspondent for tonight's show. So we may or may not hear, sometimes we hear from people who don't let us know ahead of time. So we might get an idea of what happened. I don't want to give away spoilers. I am curious, though, if they go to Ronda and Naomi against Charlotte and Sonya as a tag match, as the top attraction next week on SmackDown, in addition to the Sami Nakamura match.
Yeah.
That'd be giving away a lot.
It's a shame that they don't kind of let us in on the fact that they're taping them, because starting next week's show with that would be kind of cool as a bookend, like we picked up right where we left off. But this isn't a sitcom
yeah.
or, you know, like Ozark or something, so I don't think that'll work. But anyway, that's beside
well,
the point.
I just have to say, Alex, I watched all of Ozark, and I did not know it was a sitcom. I watched it wrong.
I'm sorry. I said it's not like a sitcom or like Ozark or something.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to
okay.
differentiate between the two.
Got
you're
okay.
correct. Just finishing myself.
Ozark is not a sitcom. Oh, my God. It's like the opposite. That is just high tension. Really, really fun series. Well, not a fun series if you're into just being horrified by terrible decisions and yeah, and bad family dynamics and drugs and gambling and sad deaths, too. I was bummed out about some of the things in this season. Anyway, no spoilers here. All right, let's pause. We're going to introduce the show, and then we're going to get to phone calls, and we're going to talk Goldberg and Sammy and everything else on this program. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show for Friday, February 11th, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, founder, publisher of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter. I know it goes back at least 30 years, Alex, because you talk about it every week on the new PW Torch Dailycast, which we'll plug in just a second. And I am also the editor of our main website, pwtorch.com, updated every day with news and live TV coverage and special features. So hope everybody is checking that out on their smartphones or tablets or laptops or desktops. And also the host of a variety of VIP audio shows, including Everything with Rich Fan, The Fix with Todd Martin. The Wade Keller Hotline, including the Focus on WWE and Focus on AEW varieties, and also post-premiere live events and post-pay-per-view roundtables. A lot of exclusive content for VIP members, along with many other VIP features with other podcast hosts. So if you're not a VIP member, we encourage you to do so. Full information at pwtorch.com/govip. We also have a way you can support us on Patreon, three different tiers. Entry tier gets you these shows with the ads and plugs removed and some bonus content. And then the top tier gets you all the VIP content in addition to that. So you can check us out at patreon.com/pwtorch. All right. The other voice you hear on this show is Alex McDonald, and he is the pwtorch.com SmackDown Alt Perspective reporter. And he is also the host of a new PW Torch daily cast with Patrick Moynihan. By the way, I have to correct my Patreon URL. It's patreon.com/pwtorchvip. So just want to get that in there so I don't forget. Alex, welcome. Good to have you back in the co-host chair. How you doing?
No complaints. I was actually pleasantly surprised with tonight's show, so I'm glad we get to talk about something that I didn't hate.
I know. I was pleasantly surprised, too. And I wasn't, like, loving it for most, like the first half, roughly. I'd have to go look, but I was like, yeah, you know, it's all, you know, I mean, there's some things to talk about here, but I don't know that my enthusiasm is high. And really by the end, I was like, this was a good episode, and I'm excited to talk about it with callers and emails. So cool. Alex, tell people about your new show that you're doing on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. It drops on Friday nights. And it is a, I think, a really cool concept. It's a real fun way to learn about wrestling history during, at this point, we're in the 30 years ago format. You're at a pocket of time that doesn't get talked about as much as, like, the early WrestleMania years and the late 80s, the Jim Crockett versus WWF and the rise of Vince McMahon Jr. era, or, of course, the Monday Night War era and the ECW era. And then, of course, there's just recency, not recency bias, but more people talk about Evolution and Brock Lesnar and John Cena and all that, you know, those years too. There's this pocket of time where fascinating things were happening in the early 90s, and you guys are covering it in depth. So anyway, I'm plugging it now. Go ahead.
Well, it is myself and Patrick Moynihan. You can actually catch Patrick right now if you're an AEW fan, as he does the Alt Perspective report for Rampage. So we're kind of back-to-back on Fridays, and then our show drops Friday as well. So it's like Alex and Patrick all over PW Torch every Friday. But anyway, it is the PW Torch 90s past cast as a part of the Daily Cast lineup. We are looking at an issue of PW Torch from 30 years ago this same week. We typically record on like Wednesday or Thursday night, and then you guys get to hear it a little bit later. Past topics include a little bit of steroid allegations against Hulk Hogan after appearing on Arsenio Hall, excuse me. This past week, we just talked about a title change in the GWF with Bruce Pritchard turning heel, which was crazy that that was the cover story, but they were the number three promotion at the time.
Yeah, yep.
And then
they were on ESPN 5 days a week.
They were at 4 o'clock every day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was an after school, like, you know, viewing destination for a lot of wrestling fans during that stretch of time. Joe Pedicino was a, you know, one of the really one, maybe the first wrestling promoter who came out of wrestling fandom more than the old guard. And he was the most friendly to the sheets, the insider newsletters like Pro Wrestling Torch, the most friendly of any of the promoters at that point. Vince McMahon was more than arm's length. Jim Herd and some of the, you know, he was a curmudgeon running WCW. Jim Crockett Jr. was kind of old school. And Joe was just really friendly to wrestling media and took some of their ideas, hired Sean Waltman and Jerry Lynn and Del Wilkes, Buff Bagwell, some, you know, rising indie stars with some acclaim. And it was, it's a company that just kind of has been forgotten about, I think, there's a lot of people who think they know wrestling history who don't know as much about that as they ought to. And I'm not saying it's as influential as ECW, but it was significant.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of little innovative things that they did at the time, and some of their match finishes were creative. And anyway, we talk about that every week. We also touched on the Royal Rumble 1992 recently, Clash of the Champions 18. We're currently in February of 1992. Kip Fry has just taken over WCW. Things are moving and shaking, and every week you can hear about how I want to push Steve Austin to the moon and how Patrick always seems to leave Steve Austin out of his pillar conversations. We also tie a lot of stuff into now. So if you weren't watching at that time, it's a good, you know, kind of time machine deal where you can learn some things you probably didn't know. If you were watching at that time, it's a good nostalgia trip to kind of go back there and hear how Patrick and myself relate it to things going on today and some interesting sidebar stories from us and things like that.
I think Kip Allen Fry is now the executive vice president of the Heritage Group. I just looked him up. I was curious what he's up to these
really?
Days. So, yeah. He was a nice guy. He was in over his head. Didn't make a lot of good decisions. Didn't make all bad decisions for WCW. He wasn't the answer to their problems then. But he was a nice guy and friendly to me. Definitely the most friendly of the WCW EVPs during that early 90s era under the ownership of Ted Turner.
I do have a question since you brought up that he was a nice guy. Were you in attendance at the luncheon that's talked about in the PW Torch?
Was it an online? It wasn't online. Was it a phone call or in person?
It was an in-person luncheon.
No, then I wasn't. I think I remember him doing some media conference calls at a time when that was, you know, kind of a new thing, but I did not attend the in-person one.
Okay. And there was also, I'm going to razz you a little bit, but me and Patrick have been talking about it. Do you realize that 30 years ago, you thought that Bo Beverly could be a cornerstone possibility?
Was that Wayne Bloom? That was, he was previously Wayne the Train Bloom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I saw him in the Destruction Crew. Wayne Bloom and Mike Enos were in Destruction Crew, and I would attend the Rochester, Minnesota ESPN TV tapings for the AWA circa 1990-ish. And Wayne was like, it was not a deep AWA roster at that point, but Wayne Bloom was good, and his promos were good. And I got to see him up close. I was leaning on the ring apron shooting photos during the vast majority of that era of the AWA tapings in Rochester for ESPN. And I did. I thought he could be good. But, you know, like a lot of people who go to WWF, that, you know, Vince sees them one way, and then that's the only way anyone ever sees them. I mean, I'm not saying that had somebody gotten behind him, he would be a centerpiece act and have succeeded, but he was among I will stand by that, not seeming as crazy in retrospect as maybe you think.
You had him ahead of Owen.
Don't say it. Don't say it. No, okay, go ahead. Yeah.
You had him ahead of Owen Hart.
Well, Owen was kind of bland. He wasn't good on promos. Wayne Bloom could take command of that microphone. What? Have you seen some of his AWA work?
I have. He's a tag wrestler.
Well, yeah. Well, so was Steve Austin. He was in the Hollywood Blood.
Stop. He was a single guy before that.
All right. All right. I'm doing my best to defend 20-year-old me. All right. Anyway, go ahead. Do you have more to say about your show?
No, I don't. I don't.
Okay.
It's a fun trip for everybody.
Yes. So go to just search PW Torch on your podcast app, PW Torch, and the Daily Cast lineup will pop up. It's a strip of shows every week, one new show every day of the week. Each day has a different theme to the show. There's a show dedicated to ROH and AEW and NXT, MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans, the Deep Dive with Rich Fan, the longtime anchor on Sunday nights, the live call-in show with Greg Parks, Wrestling Night in America. Did I do seven? I feel like I'm leaving someone out. I'm going to be in trouble. I think that's all. I think that's seven. Yeah. So anyway, it's free, and I encourage you to subscribe. There's some just great, fun pairings on that lineup covering different topics. So dive on in, everybody. All right. So we're here to talk SmackDown. We've got a bunch of people on hold. We invite you to join them. The number to get in line on our phone lines is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1 on your keypad, that will flag you on our switchboard. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, about 5 minutes or so after the shows, after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end. We are live streaming the show from WadeKellerPostShow.com. There are links to the direct stream in the, my TV reports at PWTorch.com every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So look for the Keller reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, and then you can click on the link and stream the show from your laptop or phone. You can also call us and listen in that way too. I also tweet out the link and the phone number and the email on our main Twitter account every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night around the time the shows end at PW Torch. So lots of ways to find us if you have time to live stream. That's great. If you don't, as most of you do, just download the show later on our main feed. Just search Wade Keller on your podcast app, and you'll see a red logo and a blue logo show up. The post shows have the red lettering, and the main traditional podcast format that we do throughout the week have the blue lettering. And subscribe to both, and download our shows every day. We got a lot of new content throughout the week, plus some fun 5 and 10 years ago flashbacks that we throw into the mix. All right, Alex and I are now going to take some calls and continue marching through different topics on the show. We'd love to hear more from you about Charlotte and Naomi and Goldberg, topics we've already covered a lot or a bit, and other things on this show. And we will start with William in San Diego again. William, thank you so much for calling. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I think I agree that it was a good show. I think it was saved a little by the main event, surprisingly good main event. The other show was kind of, you know, I would say barely passable, maybe mediocre at times. But I wanted to talk about
I agree with that.
Sami Zayn. Yeah. I wanted to talk about Sami Zayn and how seemingly it feels, I think they're going into Knoxville Zayn at Mania, it seems like. I was a little surprised that they're keeping that feud going after the Rumble. And it's also what makes it also a little weird is that I thought that for sure Sammy was going to take the title from Shinsuke next week because they just haven't been doing anything with Shinsuke and that IC title. And I thought that would be like a good change of pace. But I don't know how this Knoxville feud continuing changes things. Sorry. What do you guys think?
Alex, talk about that.
All right. Well, the first thing I'm going to say is I was hoping Sammy would win. I'm sure those of you guys that read my report have seen that I think I've brought up the fact that the Intercontinental title hasn't been defended every week now since it's been defended. Like, no joke.
Yep.
Anyway, it really bothers me. So I was hoping Sammy would win because at least when Sammy doesn't defend the title every week, it'll be under the guise of that's Sammy's character. However, I do agree with you. After tonight, I'm starting to think Nakamura is going to retain and then just not defend it again. In the back of my head, though, I'm a little afraid that Zayn is going to win the Intercontinental title and then somehow lose it to Johnny Knoxville at WrestleMania, like you just mentioned them having a match.
Yeah.
Johnny's walking around with a WWE World Champion Johnny Knoxville jacket, which I don't know if he knows that that's just going to draw comparisons with a certain former WCW champion, and it could turn fans against him if he goes from I'm going to irritate Sammy to I'm going to be a champion in WWE. Because I do think fans are having I think Johnny's doing a fun – He's been doing a good job having fun with Sammy and irritating him, and Sammy's been great playing off of him. But I don't know that fans want to see him going after a title, even though WWE might be tempted to do that, Alex.
I don't want any part of it. I hate the Johnny Knoxville thing. I'm more okay with Bad Bunny because at least Bad Bunny put in some effort and could work. I mean, a Johnny Knoxville-Sami Zayn match is going to be what? Johnny Knoxville gets beat up by a guy who gets beat up by everybody else and then gets a roll-up win. I mean, that's just the only way that I could see it possible.
Yeah. It is wrought with potential to backfire on WWE. There's, you know, probably a couple matches that could, you know, Charlotte Ronda could also, depending on how things go for a while here. Anyway, back to you, William.
Yeah, kind of on that same, you're talking about it could backfire. I want to talk about, you know, the potential for that match, because it seems often, or more maybe more often than not, we get these, you know, cameo or special attractions delivery matches, and people go in them with low expectations, but they somehow, you know, I guess people go with the into them with such low expectations that they can do nothing but, you know, deliver, I guess, or exceed those low expectations. Like, I think that Bad Bunny tag match was a lot more fun than I think people expecting. People often bring up that Mayweather fight as being kind of fun too, I guess. So I don't know, do you guys have any expectations for this match? Because I think in a weird way, Johnny Knoxville makes, if you're going to bring in a celebrity, Johnny Knoxville makes perfect sense, because he does have some, you know, experience with Jackass, just putting his body on the line and doing crazy stuff. So yeah. In a weird way, I could see it being like a Shane McMahon kind of special attraction match where he just, I don't know, jumps off something crazy or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not as down on it as Alex, for sure. I mean, I think Johnny's been good in this. I think he's been striking a tone that fits pro wrestling and WWE, and it's sometimes tough for celebrities to do that. And Sammy is just so good to play off of. So I'm with you, William. I mean, I'm open-minded to because it's sort of in Sammy I trust. You know, I just think I'm open-minded if they have a singles match, if it happens to be at WrestleMania. I think it has a chance to be not a traditional good wrestling match, but an enjoyable spectacle that is it shows, like you said, some athletic ability and stunt ability from Knoxville. And I think, you know, I get the sense he would be enthusiastic about trying to make it good. And again, he's in good hands with Sammy. Alex, I don't know if I need you to clarify your opinion on this, but I assume you'll watch and be open-minded, even if you're, you know, predisposed to believing what might be true, which is it's going to be a mess or not be the best use of Sammy.
Well, okay, I'm glad you said that second part, because earlier you said in Sammy I trust, and I completely agree. Everything they hand Sammy, he turns into gold because he is that good. Sammy's one of my favorite guys on the show right now. He kind of fills that part of SmackDown in the middle that's been kind of lackluster over the last 3 or 4 months. He's really been one of the bright spots. However, I just cannot get excited about him wrestling a celebrity when I see so many other opportunities and things he could be doing. So for me, it's more on that point. The other side of it too is I just in general am not a fan of celebrity involvement when it's a one-on-one situation. If Zayn enlisted the help of whoever and we did Zayn and somebody against Knoxville and somebody similar to the Bad Bunny situation last year, it's a little bit more palatable. But a one-on-one match between a guy that's been doing Jackass and is an older guy against Sami Zayn, who, despite getting beat up all the time, is still a professional athlete. It's not believable. I don't like it.
Sami recently talked about when he renewed his deal with WWE, he's like, a lot of people just think everybody wants out of WWE to go elsewhere, you know, kind of AEW or wherever, especially people who are acclaimed like Sami as really good workers. And Sammy's like, that's not true. You know, and again, Sammy just got paid a lot of money to be a company guy. So, I mean, you know, we have to put it through that filter. But, you know, he said, and I think believably and sincerely, he really likes WWE and how he's utilized. And if not, it doesn't show. You know, it seems like he enjoys how he's being utilized. Not everybody who was on the indie scene years ago has the same attitude when they get to WWE that they thought they would once they're kind of part of the machine for a while, especially when they start cashing the paychecks and the bump card starts adding up and they've got some aches and pains and they appreciate WWE's, you know, whatever, sports entertainment style that's a little more easier on the body and has different demands on them. And then the schedule is lighter than it's ever been. So Sammy, and you have to like that, Alex, because like you and Patrick, you talked about this in the first episode. You know, you're a WWE guy, not into AEW, and Patrick's the opposite. He's into AEW, not into WWE. Sammy does seem like somebody who just gets what WWE is doing, you know, for better or for worse. There's not, you know, good and bad about WWE these days. But Sammy is really good stuff that, like, for instance, Cesaro isn't. You know, Sammy and Cesaro are similar high-quality workers. But Cesaro just isn't as good at Sammy as the other stuff that WWE really emphasizes these days. Sammy is brilliant at that, and Cesaro's not even average at that stuff. So he gets to really shine and get utilized, and we're seeing that. And, yes, I mean, it'd be great to see Sammy having the types of matches, you know, he and Kevin Owens had in NXT and that kind of thing. But I still think he'll get that chance. But he's other strengths of his are really getting to be featured lately.
No, I completely agree. As far as Sammy goes, he is. I mean, he is one of the funniest guys on the show, and he fills that comedy niche, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm sure he's happy in his role, because you're right. I mean, the first time I ever heard of Sami Zayn was when he was in Chikara, which would have been, what, 2005-ish? So you're right. Yeah. The guy's bump card is full at this point, yeah. You know? And it's not like he's super old either. So he has some mileage left, but if he can get away with not taking bumps and being a funny guy and collecting paychecks and doing Sammy for Syria, you know, more power to him, man. I would do the same thing.
Yeah, and he can do so and be entertaining in front of 2+ million people on Fox every Friday night. And, you know, being in a celebrity match, if that's where they're going for WrestleMania, is a compliment to him within the WWE, you know, management structure, Vince McMahon especially. I mean, they obviously value Sammy at this point. William, back to you.
Yes. Wanted to talk about the Los Lotharios. It's kind of funny because earlier today I was talking to a few friends and we were kind of reminiscing about, you know, when we were kids and how it seemed like people, wrestlers back then had more, I guess, production value put into their entrances. You had guys like JBL coming out in limousines or Eddie Guerrero with his lowrider, Batista doing the whole Gatling gun thing and just like explosions of pyro. And I feel like that's something that's lacking today with a lot of, you know, quote unquote superstars is that they just don't have a lot that they don't take that entrance as a way to distinguish themselves. And frankly, from WWE's part, it's not like they give him a lot to work with from a budget or production sense. And, you know, not to compare the Kids Camp, the new addition to Los Lotharios, to something like JBL coming out in the limousine every week. But it is a little touch that I kind of like a little. Maybe it was confirmation bias because I had been just coincidentally been talking about something like that earlier today. What do you guys think about that new addition? What do you guys think about the match? I didn't think it was as good as last week, and I don't know what it does to have 50-50 booking. Like, yeah, the New Day beat them last week, but look, Los Lotharios beat them today by roll-up. I don't know if that does anything. What do you guys think?
Alex, what did you think of the New Day Los Lotharios match and Kiss Cam?
I'm really happy we get to talk about Los Lotharios. I didn't think anybody else cared enough about them to bring them up besides me. But anyway, I'm a big fan of Angel Garza. Humberto Carrillo is fine, and I could kind of take him or leave him. But I would do a lot with Garza, and I really like their team. I like that they went out and got matching gear. I think that's a great idea, and they actually have cool-looking stuff. And I agree with you about their entrance. I was very interested in the whole Kiss Cam thing. I mean, besides the obvious plant that they found, I wish they could find somebody who was slightly less
obvious. Oh,
but
yeah.
But besides that, it was a cool thing. Also, they had a new nickname tonight. I wrote it down, but now it's escaping me. I don't know if you remember what it is off the top of your head.
The Deadly Lovers.
Lethal Lovers?
Lethal Lovers.
Lethal Lovers? I think it was. Yeah.
they need to go with that as their name.
I think I think this was the beginning of that transition. I bet they do switch.
Because nobody, I guarantee you, nobody understands what the Los Lotharios is a reference to anyway. That very few people in this audience understand what that's a reference to. So they need to just drop it and transition over as fast as they possibly can. As far as the match goes, it was really good. I agree with you. It wasn't as good as the one last week. And William, you mentioned that they got the win by roll up. And in WWE speak, that means that they're still lesser than the New Day. It's not quite 50-50 booking. It's more like 60-40 because the New Day got to win with their finish and Los Lotharios got to win with a roll-up, kind of cheap roll-up deal. So my point is it's like 60-40 in favor of the New Day.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think given how Garza and Humberto have been portrayed in recent months, easing them into being credible opponents to New Day by having a kind of fluke upset leverage win that didn't come by distraction. Did it come by distraction? It might have. There was a distraction, but I think it was a minute before the finish.
Yeah, it didn't directly lead to the finish, correct?
Yeah. And so to me, I'm okay with them easing into them gaining, to use WWE speak, momentum. And I also think, man, if Los Lotharios are beating New Day clean after how people feel about how Big E has been sort of yanked from centerpiece singles babyface champion on Raw to just being relegated to being in tag team matches with Kofi again, and they start losing to Los Lotharios, I think there could actually be a distracting backlash against that. I get what you're saying about, hey, if you're really serious about this, give them a more decisive win, but I just don't think they've told that story well enough, and I think they're at risk of a backlash because of that resentment about Big E right now. Not the sympathy for Big E, but resentment about how WWE's treating him.
I agree, but they pinned Kofi, and Kofi doesn't matter to them anyway.
Right.
So if you're going to pin Kofi, I don't see what the harm is in having Garza hit the winged angel or the angel's wings or something like that.
Yeah.
In this case, I don't see what the problem is there. If it's Big E taking the fall, I'm with you 1,000%. But since you brought up Big E, I wrote down something that Corey Graves commented on, and I don't know if you caught this or not. But Graves commented at the beginning of the match that he got to watch all of Big E's WWE title reign up close and in person, but it's clear that he looks more comfortable next to Kofi Kingston. Did you hear that?
I don't recall him saying that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he did. Wow.
He brings up the comfort level next to Kofi Kingston. That tells you everything that you need to know, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of this a few ways, but do you think that's just Corey Graves trying to tell the audience?
No, I think that's a piped in line. 1,000%. That this
from
is
Vince
where
McMahon.
This guy belongs. Yeah.
Yeah. That, well, that's kind of what I'm saying is like, they're using, I should phrase it better. They're using Corey Graves's quote credibility in sort of a meta way to convey to the audience on multiple levels, different types of fans. This is where Big E belongs. Either get over it or embrace it.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
That.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good catch. I pride myself on hearing what announcers say, and somehow I missed that. So, that is a key line, and yeah, it's a bummer. Because I got the sense Big E was happy and excited, and believing he was doing well, and I think he was correct, and I think it's unfortunate how things have gone, and some of it is just happenstance. I think. If Xavier Woods didn't get injured, and if Roman Reigns didn't miss day one, then I think Lashley would have beat Big E at the Rumble, but Big E probably would not be discarded wouldn't have been on SmackDown in tag team matches right now. He'd be in Raw and singles matches, especially if Jeff Hardy and Drew was injured for a while. Who else is out on SmackDown? Like, it's just a lot of things happened. sort of the imperfect storm for Big E to send him into this zone. And it's too bad. I hope he gets another chance, but I think that comment by Graves that comment from McMahon through Graves might indicate Vince is going to be pretty stubborn about it.
Yeah, I don't know. What's funny is I'm like backtracking on myself after last week, because when they had that match last week, Big E looked really motivated. Like, he had that, okay, well, if this is how it's going to be, I'm going to have the best match on the show every night, and you guys are going to have no choice because I'm going to gain so much momentum. And I commented about that, and I felt pretty good about it. After watching that match tonight, his feelings have changed, and thus so have mine. I didn't see tonight. I think he's figured it out and maybe resigned himself to that fact. And it sucks, but it kind of is what it is. I wasn't shy about, I didn't like how they put the way that they got the title onto Big E, but I thought he did a good job. It's not like he was the worst champion in the world. You know what I mean? Like I can think of five worst champions off the top of my head in the last 20 years pretty easily, that continued to have top level pushes afterwards. And anyway, it's sad, but
yeah,
it's the reality right now.
William, anything else you want to bring up before we let you go?
Yes. I guess my last topic I want to talk about was the Aaliyah Natalya match. I guess I should have seen it coming, because last week we had that little interaction between Xylee and Natalya, and that should have given it away, but for some reason it just didn't register in my brain. But watching the match, I was actually, you know, they played that little recap before the match, where they showed all these clips, clips of Aaliyah being kind of a dorky, you know, just being so happy with these lame finishes, where she was happy about winning the count out, beating her so bad that she got DQ'd, and it just made her look like such a loser. But I thought, you know, I was watching the match and kind of gave it a chance. And I thought that, you know, it wasn't like Aaliyah was blowing me away, but I thought she was holding her own, and it helps to be in the ring with someone like Natalya, who's a veteran, and she can help these younger talent, you know, coming to their own and learn about how to work in the ring. But I thought she was doing okay, and I thought, you know, Aaliyah could probably be like a decent underdog. Not that they have a mid-card in the women's division, but mid-card level talent. And then Natalya just beat her kind of clean. You know, she tapped out, and they moved on from her into Xylee. And I honestly don't know that much about Xylee, since I don't think I've seen a single episode of NXT in the last year. And I could probably count in one hand how many episodes I've seen since they moved to USA Network. So Xylee is kind of an unknown for me. What do you think about that? The finish to that match, kind of sacrificing Aaliyah just to have Xylee come in and look like the stronger person who WWE is flagging. This is the person that we really care about.
Yeah, Alex, did WWE get this right when we look at the skill level of everyone involved?
Yes and no. I wanted to see more from Aaliyah. The biggest question I have about this match, and I'm sorry to answer your question with a question, but I need to know. Last week they referred to this as a Dungeons Rules match like four times. Did anybody mention that tonight at all?
I thought I heard Dungeon once, but it didn't show up as a graphic, and they really didn't underline it, accentuate it, draw a lot of attention to it. It just turned out like it was sort of like surprising when Aaliyah grabbed the bottom rope and the ref's like signaling, no, this doesn't, I can't break on this. And they're like, yep, in this match, it's not a DQ, but they weren't stressing it. So I wonder if, I don't know if it was, do you have any theory on why they would have backed away from calling it a dungeon?
No, I don't. And it was just weird, because what I expected when they kept doing that last week is, do you remember, I want to say it was like 25 years ago now, but William Regal and Jericho had a match, and it was like Duchess of Queensberry or something like that.
Yeah.
And Jericho kept winning, and they kept changing the rules.
Yes.
I thought they were going to do that. That was the
exact thing
they were going to do.
Yep.
Like
yep.
the whole time last week, and then tonight when it's just this random, you can only win by pinfall or submission, and then all of a sudden rope breaks don't count. It just, it was flat. I thought that was stupid. As far as Xia Li goes, thank God she didn't pause to shoot lightning out of her fingers before she came and helped.
Yes. Yep.
Before she came and helped out. Unfortunately, William, to answer your question, I wanted to see more out of Aaliyah too. I'm with you that I never thought she was going to be like wrestling Becky or Charlotte or anything like that, but she could have been somebody in the mid card. I'm 1000% with you on that, but I think unfortunately she's kind of dead now and is going to be the little, you know, meek sidekick to Xia Li as we get into Xia Li's stepping stone to greater things in, other words, Natalia.
Yeah, I don't think Aaliyah's ready for much more than what happened here. So I'm fine using her as just sort of, you know, they got a month or so out of this. The Guinness Book of World Records, Fluke wins. Natalia gets upset, acts like a bully. She gets a win. She still acts like a bully. Meanwhile, Parallel Universe Xia Li is, parallel to this, Xia Li is saying, I'm here to you know, snuff out bullies. And so you have a situation where she can be that person. I mean, it's broad brushstroke WWE booking, but it's logical enough for me. And Xia Li is better. It's going to have better matches with Natalya than Aaliyah is capable of at this point. I thought Aaliyah seemed like a scrappy rookie who is enthusiastic and cartoonishly so at times, but not ready to be getting even wins over Natalya, I don't think. But, you know, just move her to another, you know, feud with someone where she can just get more reps and get better. William, any quick closing words, and then we'll move on to our next caller here.
No, that's about it. Well, I guess you guys mentioned Craig Graves being in commentary this week, Pat McAfee being absent. I didn't really miss Pat McAfee a lot, to be quite honest. So, yeah, I don't know if you guys want to talk about that, but that's all I had. Thank you guys for taking my call, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, William. Appreciate it. Great topics, as always. It was actually kind of nice having Corey Graves there. I mean, Corey has, you know, strengths and weaknesses, or, you know, just on a personal level for me, good and bad things that he does. But McAfee has been overbearing. I thought last week he pulled back a little, and that was good. But he went from somebody I was a fan of to someone who I felt was either being amplified by Vince McMahon to a cartoonish degree, or getting a little too full of himself, or losing his way. So yeah, in a way it was a nice breather to miss it, you know, to not have him around this week, and maybe not next week too, unless they have him dub over his commentary.
I assume he won't be on.
Yeah, I assume so too. I mean, they have the opportunity anytime next week after the Super Bowl to have him just do a voiceover if they want, but then he wouldn't be on camera. So that'd be awkward.
Yeah. That's the problem, is because you have to keep in mind that one of the advertised matches for next week is Nakamura and Boogs. So
they can't do
that entrance without him. You know what I mean? They can't really hide the fact that he's not there when they do that entrance, because he's such a big part of it now.
Michael Cole could wear the same suit he wore like 6 weeks ago when McAfee did it, and then they could just cut to footage from 6 weeks ago when he stood on the table, and nobody would notice.
That's not a bad idea.
Anyway, what are your thoughts on McAfee lately?
I still like McAfee. When I'm typing up these shows, one of the best things is his little one-liners that make me chuckle while I'm kind of going through stuff and trying to pay attention, you know?
Yeah.
With that said, Corey Graves is the only announcer on Raw that I like, and I think behind McAfee, Corey Graves is probably my favorite announcer in the company right now. So I'm not going to complain too much about having Graves on. I'm really glad they went with him instead of, say, Byron Saxton. That's just kind of where I stand on it, though.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. Appreciate it again, Mike. If you're live streaming us, give us a call, 347-215-8558. If you've joined us midstream, I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program. Co-host today is Alex McDonald, who is a PW Torch podcaster and writes SmackDown TV reports at pwtorch.com on Friday nights with a lot of analysis. So hope you're checking that out either live during the show or if you missed the show, catch up and not only find out what happened, but get his point of view and then click over to my report and get my point of view and see if we match up. All right, we have a international or Skype or block call here. If you hear a little noise, you're on. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. If you are on hold, state your name, and then we will tell you if we heard your name. I heard a little rustle there. If you called us and pushed once, state your name now. Everyone. Oh, we just tried. I tried every method to get him to. All right, I'm going to mute you and unmute you. I think it makes a little noise when we do that. If you heard you were muted and unmuted, state your name and where you're calling from. All right. Now we're going to hang up on you, and now you're going to be embarrassed. So call us back. All right. We'll go next to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Welcome, Sean. Thank you for calling. Always good to hear from you.
Wade, it's always good to talk to you, man. Alex, good to talk to you again, man. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, Sean. I'm actually glad you called.
Man, oh, dude, that makes me feel good inside. Makes me feel all gooey inside, man. I appreciate that. we'll just talk main event. We'll go back to the main event. The show was okay. It was fine. I mean, it wasn't great by any means. I mean, I don't disagree with you guys on the main event. Michael and Corey and the fans did get into it. And that's what I did like about the match. The fans were into it. They were into the near falls. I knew going in, Naomi just wasn't going to win. And so for me, it kind of takes it out of it when I just know she's not going to win. And I just don't like it. It was the best match I've seen Naomi in a little while, but it still was that's a low bar. Like, I don't think the match was that fantastic of a match. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was as good as you guys did. And part of it, again, is Charlotte's stupid moonsault. I hate that spot. Stop. It takes me out of it. I just,
every time.
I don't know. Alex, what do you think about that? Because I know, wait, I mean, I know you're not, it's okay. But, like, Alex, what do you think about it? Because I'm tired of her doing it every match. I know it's a championship match, and, of course, they're going to go to it in that kind of a match. But it just looks so bad now, the way she has to do it, leap twice. And I'm just, what do you think about it?
The moonsault? I hate the moonsault. But I did like tonight that I don't remember the last time she's missed both of them. So I thought that was really cool that they actually went out of their way, like Naomi was watching tape or something, you know, and she got her knees up and did something about it. You're right. It looks terrible. I mean, but it's you have to accept that it's part of her repertoire at this point. And, you know, just you do.
I mean,
Alex,
because, like, unfortunately, you can hate it all you want, but Charlotte's not going to stop doing it. It's in her bag of tricks. It's like Steve Austin doing the Fez press, you know? You're going to see it all the time. It's like Shane McMahon's terrible punches. It's part of what they do.
Yeah. There's some of Naomi's kicks that I don't care for. She goes to that, like, way too much, way too many kicks. Like, the rear view is okay. Like, the one off the top rope she did, you know, which was like the near fall that I was actually into, like, that was a good near fall. But I just thought the match was just plodding. I'm glad they gave it time, but it was just too plodding. It was just, I don't know. It was fine. Alex, what do you think of Naomi as a performer? Because, like I said, I just don't care for her as a performer as far as in the ring. Like, she's genuine. I like the way she talks. And I want to say real quick, going back to the initial segment when Mr. McMahon, you know, quote-unquote said, Sonya, you can't interfere and all that, which was fine. I don't know if Adam knew that was coming and was a fan of that happening, or, you know, are we supposed to believe he knew about this the whole time, or did, you know, Vince just all of a sudden say, Adam, you need to tell this to Sonya, you know, kind of thing. But I don't like when Naomi came in the ring and just slapped Naomi, Naomi came and slapped Sonya. Like, that's not a babyface move to me. I don't know. I just think that made her look kind of weak and kind of stupid in that role. What did you think about all that?
I kind of went back and forth on that slap myself. I was like, I don't know. I didn't react to it like it was a babyface move. The announcers, you know, Cole said, oh, it must feel good to get that up. But then I thought about everything Sonya has done to her and the context of her emotions. And I'm like, you know what? If you're ever going to give a pass to a babyface just taking a free shot at a heel and slapping them, that would be the time, given what a pest and punk Sonya has been towards her.
Yep. That 1,000%. You took the words right out of my mouth. It's Sonya has gone out of her way to make this woman's life hell for what feels like 4 years at this point. But Naomi was never able to retaliate. And again, we don't even know why. So in that moment, I do think the slap was excused. Sean, though, I'm going to comment on the Adam Pearce thing first, because they did explain that, but it wasn't explained very well. Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville were apparently a part of a group email with Mr. McMahon, or Adam was CC'd on it, which actually makes perfect sense, because if we look at it from the lens of him and Sonya are equals, or if he's the boss, he would be CC'd even if he was blind CC'd. So that does make sense, like in the corporate world. Anyway, the email stated that Sonya could not get involved, and clearly because Sonya's in the ring, she couldn't check her phone to look at the email. So that was how they explained that away. I don't know if you caught that or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was fine.
And then you asked me about Naomi. I do not like her work in the ring at all. And what's really funny is I'm going to sound like an idiot for saying this, but to me, Naomi is one of the most bland people on the roster, despite every attempt to make her not seem that way with all the glow and dancing and all that. I honestly think that all of that still does not mask how boring she actually is to me. That's why I liked this match so much, because it was the first time that I've seen her break out. And yes, I'm with you. We knew Charlotte was not going to lose. We knew that. But they got me with one of those near falls, and they were all believable enough that for a second I could think, holy, really? They're going to have her win, and Charlotte's going to get the title back in like 2 weeks or something, and then everything will be fine again. Because remember, WWE's done that in the past. So I did think about it more than a couple of times, and since they made somebody as cynical as me think about that, they didn't stop.
I'm with you every step of the way. It crossed my mind, even though intellectually I knew better. Emotionally, I got wrapped up in the story they told, and they did enough. You know, they acknowledged just as Goldberg did when he laid out the storyline. I'm going to win, and I'm going to beat Roman Reigns. And then I'm going to defend against Brock Lesnar. And they showed the clip of him beating Brock 5.5 years ago. And it's like, oh, okay, well, they're giving me a story to believe in. They're giving me an alternate path that adds credibility to an alternate finish than the one we know is going to happen. And that's what they did here. They talked about, you know, explicitly just said the match with Charlotte and Ronda will not happen. It'll change if Naomi wins the title tonight and keeps it. And you've got to lay those scenarios out as if it's a possibility, because storyline-wise, it is. Storyline-wise, this match hasn't happened yet. Anyone can win. And you should tell that story as if it's not fait accompli, what's going to happen. And they did a nice job tonight in that regard. And that made the near falls more believable. And, you know, the audience was into it. And they weren't privy to any of what I just talked about. And that's a credit to the wrestlers pulling them into the match. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, and that's where I definitely agree. Like, the match itself was just kind of mediocre to me. But that's what you guys are saying, which I agree with. They got me more into the match by what they were saying and the way they were getting involved in it. And I give WWE credit for that. I mean, I like that part of it. I just couldn't get into the match, like, overall myself, just because there are limitations to both people in certain ways, and it just kind of – it felt plotting at times. But the end got me in, and it was fine. It was good. I wanted to go back to this with Cesaro. I've always said this, Wade. I know you've heard me talk about this. Like, I'm tired of them not getting entrances, especially Cesaro. Like, I know he's defined down to a level that, you know, whatever. You know, we can agree or disagree. Like, I kind of agree with you. Cesaro's kind of just is where he is right now. But he still needs to get his entrance. Like, I don't know. I don't like when they do that. I just think it defines you down even more than you already are. What do you think about that real quick?
Yeah, Alex, how do you feel about how Cesaro is being used? I mentioned earlier, Sammy has both the in-ring skill comparable to Cesaro, but also this personality and acting ability that fits what WWE tries to do with their TV shows better than Cesaro. And it's too bad if Cesaro had found that niche, you know, on his pro personality, he would be being utilized more and protected more than he is. This is, you know, I don't know if this is a low point for Cesaro. It's tied for a low point, I guess. It's not a new low point because we've seen him sort of a jobber to the stars, so to speak, at other times too, in between little pushes and even semi-big pushes.
I'm going to disagree with you and say this is a low point for him or the low point because he's not a jobber to the stars anymore, Wade. He's a jobber.
Yeah.
This roster is so thin that at this point, he's not quite like the Goon or Brooklyn Brawler or in that category, but he's like the next step up. The only reason he's not those guys is because in a 4-minute match, he gets 45 seconds worth of offense where those guys got zero. But I mean, again, he got 45 seconds to a minute worth of offense in a 4-minute match with Corbin. He's a jobber. This is the low point. But
yeah,
to circle back to what we talked about earlier, he's another guy that bump card's full. I talked about Chikara earlier. That was the first time I ever heard the name Claudio Castagnoli as well. And that was in that same time frame, you know. And this is a guy who's probably got more bumps on that bump card than Sammy does. So he's collecting a check. He's torn and doing what he's got to do. And, you know, it is what it is. But Cesaro's last shot was the deal with Reigns last year. And it didn't work out. It was a one-off, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah. All right, Sean, back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to say one quick thing going back to Los Lotharios, or if they end up calling them the Lethal Lovers, which would be pretty funny. They talked about, or Michael brought up, you know, this is the red hot team that's on a roll. And it's like, no, they're not on a roll. They've lost like a bunch. Like, you know, they're trying to buy that they're on a roll. They're this hot tag team. It's like, no, you've kind of jobbed them in a lot of ways. And like you said, Alex, getting a roll up win, you know, it's kind of just, that doesn't really help them. So I don't know what they're going to do with them. I mean, I like them in the ring, but I mean, they're not really doing much with them. But the other quick thing I was going to bring up was going back to Goldberg. I mean, I thought he was fine tonight. This is not the best promo he's ever done. Cause number one, the best promo he ever did was in front of the fans when he came back 5 years ago or 6 years ago at Survivor Series. That was the best promo he's ever done. That was actually genuine. There was fan support there to acknowledge him and, you know, quote unquote, no pun intended, but just talking about, you know, him being glad to be back and all that kind of stuff. But this for an in, you know, out of ring promo, I thought this was definitely the best they could have done. And then I just wanted to hear what you thought about, you know, Roman, what he did. I'm going to Goldberg. I thought that was a really good line. And then Wade, I wanted to say real quick, I went back to when you did, you know, you're doing the 5 years ago stuff on VIP, and, you know, if you're not a VIP member, you're just, you know, you're missing out on way too much. But it is fun hearing myself back, Wade, when you did the post-Rumble show 5 years ago, and I was the first-time caller. I was like, holy crap, that's a long time ago. But it's the best 5 years I could have ever had as a member. Wade, you give out the best content, man. Alex, I love what you're doing on the Torch for your part of everything you're doing. Always like to hear your insight, man, and I always appreciate you guys taking my call, as always.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. It's always fun listening back to these 5 and even 10 years ago call-in shows and hearing some of the same voices and realizing, you know, Craig from Toledo. And, I mean, it's just like these familiar names, and they're just regulars, and they're kind of part of the caller crew. So, you know, I don't keep track exactly when people call for the first time, but And it's sad when, you know, I never know when is the last time we're going to hear from someone. And for whatever reason, they drop off. But it's cool when I listen back and hear names that are still around and then wonder whatever happened to, you know, this caller and that caller. But anyway, Alex, anything you want to respond to? I think you brought up the Roman Reigns Heyman thing in particular.
Oh, I mean, I'm never going to say anything bad about this iteration of Reigns. The best part, the two best parts of that segment were Heyman. And if you look at him in the background of that and his like affectionate, like schoolgirl glances at Reigns and like how much he hangs on everything he says, that was awesome. That was really good. And his line at the beginning where Michael Cole mentioned a legend coming back next week and Heyman said something to the effect of, I'm not a legend. I'm merely the special counsel to the tribal chief. That was funny.
Yeah.
The best line on the entire show tonight was Roman Reigns when he said, if I was in WCW, everybody would be winning because they would still be in business. That was awesome.
Yep, it was good stuff. It's fun seeing Reigns in the environment that works best for him. You know, we didn't have the Usos, you know, the Usos attack Viking Raiders, but they kind of pulled them a little bit away from the Reigns act compared to where, well, for sure they pulled them away compared to where they once were. But Heyman and Reigns, there's chemistry there. I mean, there's chemistry with Heyman and just about everybody he works with. Heyman and Big E on Raw Talk or Talking Smack just did great work. Heyman had chemistry with Sting back in the era you're covering. On the 30 Years Ago podcast, he would, you know, some of the best promos Sting ever did was when Heyman was hosting his Danger Zone segments on WCW TV. I mean, it's just, you know, Paul brought out the best in Rob Van Dam and just incredible. I mean, there's just so many people who, when they work with Paul Heyman on camera or he's directing them off camera, they do their best work. And Reigns is one of those people also. Reigns isn't lost without Paul, but he is better with Paul. And I think Reigns is more comfortable knowing that Paul is amplifying his character by fawning over him the way that that you noticed. And so, yes, it's fun. It's fun to see them back in that mode. And there were some good lines and they've made me care more about a Goldberg match on this show than I was coming into the show. And so, you know, that's good. And I don't think I'm alone.
You're not. I agree. I am not, nor have I really ever been a Goldberg fan. And, you know, I'm getting sick of them digging him up every time they go to Saudi so he can collect his check.
I know.
And I really hope this is the last time. That's really the only complaint that I have about the build tonight is they're not building in some sort of retirement angle for him.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And obviously that's intentional. I'm not an idiot. I know that that's because it's not going to happen. So they're not going to write in something that won't have a payoff contrary to what they normally do. But no, they did a really good job. And again, those sit down interviews are great. And that's where Reigns excels as well as Goldberg. I like Reigns in the ring as much as anybody else, but since we've been back from the pandemic and we've had fans back, I think that the Reigns character has suffered from not having those backstage segments where he can speak softly and that
and
kind
just
of
lean back and be chill in his chair, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The Usos. They've peeled them away ever since Jimmy came back and since they got in front of the crowd, which is a shame because of Jay and how well Jay was doing. Like, he'll never outwardly say this because the guy is his brother, but Jimmy Uso is hurting the career of Jay Uso very badly.
Yep. I think you're right. I think you're right. Back to the sit-down interview, too. Two quick notes. Goldberg, Michael Cole asking Goldberg about how people say, you know, he's lost something. Is this one comeback too many? I just in particular, I like Goldberg acknowledging that that was being said and then saying, I listened to them and that's why, and I wasn't as good as I could be because I started to believe that. I started to hear it. And now I've discarded that and I'm going to be the old Goldberg. Like, I don't have memorized like Goldberg's last five matches. I know I should, you know, like, I mean, it should just come to me. I just know my impression is he's losing. He's not impressive. And ever since, you know, 5.5 years ago with a Lesnar win, he's been used as a novelty act, but not somebody you would take seriously as a world title contender. And he's lost some key matches. I just like that they acknowledged it. And Goldberg's like, yeah, but that's different. I realize that. And I'm not that person anymore. I think you should own history and then acknowledge what people are thinking, which is people are wondering, what did Goldberg do to earn this title shot? First and foremost, I guess they can say, well, you know, it was supposed to take place 2 years ago and now it's happening. I guess that's enough. In the context of WWE, the other comment I want to make is I wish Michael Cole could do sit down interviews and ask his questions in a way that didn't have the phony inflection that makes it sound like he's reciting something that he memorized precisely word for word when he asks his questions like this. He just should be better by now about knowing what he has to say, but saying it in a way that feels like his brain is coming up with the words like a normal person talks instead of like a fourth grader reciting a speech they memorized word for word does. He's not awful, but he should be better. And there's just a tone to his questions where the inflection doesn't feel authentic to my ears. And I just think he should be able to correct that.
Yeah, but he's been programmed. Michael Cole has worked there for as long as I can remember at this point. And he's been programmed. He is probably the best example of Vince McMahon, do what I say, this is what I want announcer that we can come up with. He's probably the best example. And to his credit, that's how he's kept the job for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm not going to say then, I'm just not willing to concede that means he can't just be better at how he recites these questions, though. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. I just get better at not sounding like you're asking a question with this phony, serious interviewer inflection that is not how people talk.
Would you have rather they use Kayla?
Kayla's really good. I'm not against him using Cole. Kayla's great, and I would have no problem with him using her in this situation. I just want Cole to be better when they call upon him. Yeah. I think it's when Cole does this, it makes it feel like a big deal. It takes him away from being behind the desk, which I think is good to do, whether he's standing in the ring or doing these backstage interviews. So I think that's good to have in the mix. It's just a small request. Just watch back, practice, and just loosen up a little bit on how he asks the questions. You know, just I think he's capable of it, and it's just something he needs to be told is a thing. And I just think he kind of, like you said, he's programmed, he's getting his paycheck, he just does what he's told, and I don't know if he's trying to get better anymore, you know, and he's fine. But that's one area where I'm complimentary to these segments, and they were good segments. That's just the thing that I think would have made them better is if it wasn't. So obviously Cole reciting scripted lines that he memorized, it was that over inflection.
Yeah, I agree. Quickly on Goldberg. Goldberg did win his last match against Lashley in Saudi Arabia.
That's right, yeah.
And the last time he wrestled for the Universal title in Saudi Arabia, he won also, which is what was to lead to the first Mania match between these two. He beat Bray.
What's his record going back to the win after the win over Lesnar?
Oh, he's definitely lost more. I can tell you he lost to Undertaker in Saudi when he almost killed him, which is my biggest concern for this match, by the way, because if he drops Reigns on his head, then we've got much bigger problems.
Yeah. Fortunately, Reigns is in, you know, at peak physical condition, and Undertaker was not. So, you know, it takes two to lead to a disaster, and usually one person can avoid a disaster.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know. I think of it just gives me a bad vibe. Like, I would be very, very careful putting Goldberg in there with somebody who has the, I guess cachet is the word I'll use here to describe Roman, but I would.
The essential value to the current WWE product?
Yeah, because what is this show? And Raw is whatever. It's fine. But what do you do? I don't know. Do you just go with Lesnar at that point? I don't know what you would do.
Yeah. All right. Let's go. We had a couple people drop off. So sorry we didn't get to your call first. By the way, when you call us, I say this periodically. If you want us to take you right away, we're not going to do it every week. But if there's a week where you just got something to say and you don't want to be fourth in line and you don't have time to wait, let me know. Email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Some of our callers are going to listen to the whole show and they don't care what order we take them in. So if it, you know, if your schedule is affected, if your schedule is such late at night that you want to come on early, certainly drop us a line and I'll look for your number and bring you on early. All right, we'll go next to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Heavy question about what you said about Roman Reigns' line about WCW, but how they would be, everyone would be a winner and they'd still be in business. How far do you think Roman could have won WCW? Because Batista couldn't even make it to the through the power plant, I believe, from what he said. And like, he had to be like pretty much a friend of Eric Bischoff, like DDP, or be a giant like Paul Wright to be like a major star in that company, it seemed, to break through.
Yeah, it's tough to suddenly move Roman into an era, you know, decades earlier and not account for his relationship with The Rock and the Shield gimmick and, you know, Dean and Seth carrying him for a while he was in the background being, you know, the kind of the cool guy making facial expressions like Wardlow standing behind MJF in that way, or Batista standing behind Orton and Triple H and Flair. It's hard to isolate that. I think this talent and this, the wit, if you transplant the talent and the wisdom and Paul Heyman for that matter, to WCW in that era, if, you know, Paul's working with Roman and Roman had similar but different experience, I mean, Roman would have been a star. You know, I mean, WCW was desperate for some fresh top-tier talent in those last years. And I think, you know, the politics might have eaten him up and spit him out, but maybe not. You know, Joe is a strong personality and a smart guy. He might have been able to navigate it. I mean, I'd be interested to take the current Roman Reigns with his experience and wisdom of having been in the business now as long as he has, as opposed to the guy who said, well, you know, I wanted to play in the NFL and the CFL was beneath me and I tried building furniture and when all else failed, I decided to become a wrestler. You know, I mean, that's his biography and he's told that story and expected people to be inspired by it who are pro wrestling fans. Now he's in a different place and he's a guy who's paid dues and been around and endured. You drop that guy in WCW, I'd like to see him match wits with Nash and Hall and Hogan and their shenanigans. I mean, it's a fun thought experiment. But again, there's just so many variables. Alex, any thoughts on that?
35-year-old Reigns in WCW, super successful. 25 to 27-year-old Reigns in WCW is Chuck Palumbo.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to be fair to everybody involved in it. I want to defend Roman Reigns a little bit and say he wouldn't have been Chuck Palumbo, but I also don't want to make it seem like Chuck Palumbo is this huge joke. I mean, I get what you're saying by that. As a young guy with a good look and some athletic skill who got some chances, but only when, you know, everybody on guaranteed contracts was you know, sitting out with hangnails and contract disputes.
No, and then he had a nice career as a tag guy, and Palumbo didn't have any – I didn't bring up like above-average Mike Sanders. Who was the other guy that actually – I think he tagged with Palumbo. They looked similar.
Mark Jindrak?
That's one of them, but no, there was a third one.
Yeah, I can't
he's no longer with us. He was a large guy who ended up in WWE with Piper. What was his name?
Oh. Yeah, Sean I know what you're talking about. I can't think of his name right now. Yeah,
yes.
Sean O'Hare.
Yes.
Yep.
So
yeah, Sean had
of those guys, but again, I just don't know how it would have worked out.
Sean O'Hare had a lot of intangibles. He could have, you know, he was missing some things, but for a while there, it looked like he had, you know, kind of an it factor that might have taken him somewhere. One might compare him to Wayne the Train Bloom, Alex. All right.
Oh, good Lord.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I have another question on that Aaliyah-Natalya match. Seemed to be like a clone of that ending of that Jonathan Gresham, Steve Maclin match from about a month ago where Gresham had Maclin in like a figure four and he was in the ropes. But because of the rules, you know, he got the submission victory. So that would be like keeping like a closer eye on what's happening in Impact now, because I know they shared the part of the Royal Rumble match on Impact last week. So it's like someone like Bruce Pritchard, like keeping like an eye on what's happening there and using some of their ideas.
There might be an agent, you know, who just is keeping an eye on things going on outside of WWE, who's bringing ideas to the table. I would think the best way to get an idea that you see on Impact or anywhere else, you know, in wrestling on the air on WWE is to not mention that you got the idea from watching something that isn't WWE. But, you know, there's probably some producers who are watching some stuff, and whether they are thinking about it consciously or not, bring that idea to the table. I don't know that this was something that's never been done before. Alex, any theory?
I'll be completely honest. The two wrestlers he mentioned, I've never heard of in my life.
Yeah, very good.
I haven't watched Impact in like 15 years. I have no idea.
Yep. All right, anything else for us?
Well, actually, it was a Ring of Honor match because it was a Ring of Honor pure titles match between John Gresham and Steve Maclin was the Impact guy.
Yeah, but, so anyway, what else we got for us, Ryan? Yeah.
My final thought is, it's not really a question, but just the comment that it was a sad day for wrestling when the GWF and AWA lost their time slot on ESPN. That was probably worse than when WCW went out of business, didn't they?
Boy, I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, when WCW went out of business, they were a company that deserved to go out of business, but it's still sad that they did. But the AWA was probably at that point too. And Global, I mean, was founded on a, you know, scam, not that Joe fell prey to and then worked on a limited budget afterwards, but it was enough to get him in the door. But I mean, I don't know, Ryan. I mean, I grew up on the AWA. I love that brand, but in the end it was a mercy, you know, they pulled the plug, you know, mercifully, I think. You know, it was tough to compete at that point with what the Gagne has had as assets at that point. All right, Ryan, what do you think of the main event, by the way? Were you a big fan of Naomi and Charlotte?
Yeah, I think Naomi's underrated. You know, I even liked the Sonya match from a couple of weeks ago. So, I don't know. I guess I just think that she's a little bit overlooked in talent.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend. Okay,
thank you. You too.
Yep, you bet. Our number is 347-215-8558. We have cleared the phone lines. Like I said, a few people dropped off as the show progressed. So if you are listening and still want to chime in, here's your chance to do so without a wait. Otherwise, we'll just shift to mailbag. And up first here is Justin. Justin S. emailed and says, I don't want to come off as mean, but why is everyone patting Naomi on the head for having a good match against one of the greatest female wrestlers of all time? Naomi was signed in 2009. That's not true. How do you guys feel about wrestling fans treating veteran wrestlers like Naomi like a toddler who correctly went potty? Isn't she supposed to have good championship matches like tonight at this point of her career? Alex, what say you? Are we patronizing her with praise when we say this was maybe her best match and not giving, I mean, he's getting at two things. One, she should be having a great match against someone as good as Charlotte, but also she should be having a good match with her experience level against someone who's not even at Charlotte's level. And so why are we praising her for something that should just be a normal part of her routine? But the fact is it's not. And this match was elevated beyond, I think, anyone's expectations.
That's why, because it's not. If El Gigante had had a good match in 1994, regardless of how long he had been wrestling, you would still praise him for it because it's out of the norm.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to the same restaurant all the time and the food always sucks and every once in a while it's really good and that's why you keep going, you still praise them for the times that it's good.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's not
totally.
It's hard to answer that other than that because of the fact that she doesn't do it all the time. And I respect that the last caller liked her match with Sonya a couple weeks ago, but they were like tripping over each other half the time. I thought they were both greased up the way they couldn't hang on to one another.
Yes.
So when I see something like this tonight, I want to give credit to the performer because maybe that this is the start of a new leaf for her. I'm going to try to be as positive as I can about it. I hope that this is the start of a string of matches that you're probably right with her experience level. She should be having, but she's not. So I do think that as analysts and people who follow the product, we should give her kudos when something out of the ordinary happens in a positive way.
Yeah. I mean, if you and I are not thinking Naomi is typically reliable for a good match but she's against Charlotte, so it should be good, and it turns out to be very good. And don't get us wrong. I'm not saying this was match of the year, but saying it was a really good.
I agree.
Yeah, but this was a really good TV main event. It was a pay-per-view level effort in terms of the time, the thought they put into the match, and the execution was good. And it was, you know, I'm thinking, oh, Naomi should have a good match against someone as good as Charlotte. And she had a very good match. So that's what we're pointing out. And part of what made it really good is, like I said, the announcing was really good, and the crowd was pulled into it. I don't, like, whatever my opinion is of somebody, I'm every week willing to, like, open to seeing something that goes against my expectations. And that can be somebody who people fawn over, like Kenny Omega, kind of being off course, having a bad match or an off night or a sequence that didn't go well, or looks like he's not taking good care of himself, or he must be working through an injury, or his character looks like he just rolled out of bed and didn't care about his presentation. I had all those criticisms for Kenny. It doesn't change the fact that he's one of the great wrestlers of the past, you know, 10 years. And he's going to be talked about as one of the all-time greats. But you have to change your opinion as wrestlers change, whether they have a bad month or a bad year, or they start phoning it in, or as I, you know, break Keith Lee over, the fact that he's not acting like a professional athlete should with pride in his job, and he's not in shape, he doesn't have cardio, he's gaining weight, and the frustration in WWE after chance after chance after chance that they gave him because they really know he's special. And they know he has a connection with the crowd and all that, but he's just not from the people that are friends of his and rooting for him are telling me they gave him every chance you could possibly give to somebody to just show a little bit more. So my point isn't just to pick on a show that Keith Lee's not on, pick on Keith Lee at a show that he's not on, because I want Keith to succeed. I genuinely do. And I don't think people looking past his, you know, his shortcomings right now are doing him any favors. You also want to do it on the other side, which is sometimes wrestlers aren't as bad as they used to be. Sometimes they're not as good as they used to be. Sometimes they're not as bad as they used to be. And sometimes there's breakout moments. Sometimes there's late bloomers. Sometimes they just, their head's in the right space. And physically they're against the right opponent, and they've got somebody who's encouraged them, and they're working behind the scenes. Whatever it is, you don't always know what's going on that's going to cause someone to be better than their reputation or worse than their reputation. Tonight, Naomi was better than her reputation. I think there's people who praise Naomi more than I think is merited. And this is not an I told you so moment, because I stand by her performances in the past not being great, not even being very good most of the time. But this was a match, like you say, Alex, that you hope is a sign that maybe she is, for whatever reason, in year 13, kind of finding a groove.
Yeah, I agree. Again, the other thing I want to bring up here, too, is I'm in agreement that Charlotte is one of the better female wrestlers of all time. But let's not act like Charlotte consistently brings lower level opponents up to her level, because that's also not true.
By the way, Charlotte's reputation among some people in WWE that I talk to and hear about and hear from is she's really good and she's a professional. But she's really centered on herself in terms of match planning, in terms of how angles go. And that's some of the stuff that got, you know, between her and Becky that led to some dust ups. Other top wrestlers, male and female, have reputations for, I know I'm good and I know I'm going to be just fine. How do I make my opponent come out of this match looking better? And when I'm done with them, be stronger. And Charlotte doesn't have that reputation. She has a different reputation. So it makes this match more noteworthy to me, because I think she did and I, you know, I've only watched the match once live while typing up a report, but it seemed to me that this was a match that was designed and that Charlotte was on board with it to make Naomi, in losing in the end, a bigger star and look like she's near Charlotte's level without Sonya around to interfere. So, you know, and I don't know if that's Charlotte volunteering or it's happenstance or it's begrudging or what. I just know the end product was, I think Naomi came across, even in losing, as a bigger star than she has ever come across to me.
I completely agree. This was the most giving I've seen Charlotte in a long time. We talked about those near falls earlier. And what did Naomi at one point, did she have four consecutive, like, believable near falls or five,
yeah,
something like that?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Charlotte doesn't just do that. And, you know, I'm not bagging on Charlotte. She's fantastic. But, again, she does not always bring people up to that next level because inherently she's a little selfish. You're correct. I can see that without having the sources that you have to know that. You know what I mean? But tonight she wasn't, and that aided the match, as did the fact that Naomi worked really, really hard.
Top of Charlotte's head. It doesn't mean she should be doing them. And Naomi's kicks are awful, are often not good. But I don't think they're so bad that you cut them out. I think there's just room to just try to make them look a little better. But she sort of has her style. There's certain moves that she does. And for whatever reason, it clicked tonight with Charlotte. And it was nice to see, you know, some of the things that normally might be a little groan inducing or, you know, like, that just didn't quite click. It just was a kind of a night where things clicked with her. And, you know, that's a credit to her and it's a credit to Charlotte. It's a credit to their match producer, and giving them 20 minutes is brave. And I think they really stepped up. Okay. So Justin also says, is it just me or does Rhonda seem just off? She doesn't seem like she has the same snap or pop to her. I understand she was gone for 3 years, but she just doesn't seem as special at the moment. I feel it can change by WrestleMania, but right now I'm looking forward to Becky versus Lita next week more than Ronda versus Charlotte. I had similar thoughts watching her, and, you know, I mean, she is weird. She's quirky. You know, Becky calls her the little weirdo, and, you know, she's different. You know, personality-wise, there's just an intensity, kind of a toddler temper tantrum fierceness to her that can work or not work, and it's a fine razor's edge whether it's going to work or not work. And I haven't seen enough body of evidence, you know, I know she's been working some dark matches, but to have a full sense of if she's going to be able to surprise us in the ring. But she is such a gifted athlete, and she's so determined to be good in certain ways, not in terms of being a good sport about the fans booing her. I mean, she takes some things too seriously, but I'm still curious about her because she has over-delivered on expectations before in the ring. And until she doesn't, I'm not going to be anything but hopeful/optimistic about it. Alex, what have you thought of what you've seen with her so far? Is there something different and inferior about her, or spent and less novel about her than before, or is the sample size too small, or what do you think?
She's less novel, but I still think she's a big deal. She's less novel in the sense that, like, Brock Lesnar is less novel, if that makes any sense. Just because we've already kind of seen her wrestle all these people before. It's not like the oh my God, I can't believe she's here, as it was the first time. And on top of that, the first time, they really kind of spaced those matches out. Like, the first time she was in the ring was in a mixed tag, you know what I mean? And then a year later, we got to where she's in a triple threat with the two big women stars. So they did a good job kind of building that out. With all of that said, I do think she's still a big deal. You talked about, it might have been with Todd Martin a week or two ago, about how her days as a top, like, mainstream, like, she was a pop culture phenomenon, 5 or 6 years ago. And in today's world of TikTok and instant gratification, 5 and 6 years ago is a very long time ago, as opposed to, 10 years ago, where 5 years ago wasn't that much. I know the way I worded that's a little confusing, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
I think I do. Unless I don't. But no, I'm confident I do.
But, again, I'm interested. My problem with the whole thing is I don't agree with the emailer as far as being more excited for Lita and Becky. I'm more excited to see a Becky match than I am a Charlotte match. But as far as a pairing, I would rather see Charlotte and Ronda versus Lita and Becky. But with all of that said, as far as WrestleMania goes, I would prefer Bianca and Charlotte on one side and then Ronda and Becky on the other, as opposed to what we're going to get.
Okay, let's move to another email here. Go to Joe B or Joe from New York, excuse me. Hey guys, this is the third week I've made it an appointment to watch SmackDown because it's WrestleMania season. Let me tell you my takeaway from watching 3 weeks in a row. All the shows run into the same problem: too much filler right in the middle of the show. I mean, 2 segments that kill the show: Happy Corbin and Sami and Nakamura. That's a waste of air time. It's pure garbage. Segments like that make people change the channel. As for the main event, I have to give Charlotte and Naomi credit. By the end of the match, they won me over to call it a very good match. The only problem is WWE doesn't realize when you have all that filler in the middle, it makes people change the channel, and they lose many viewers by the time you get to the main event. The other note I take from watching 3 weeks in a row of SmackDown is they love to waste airtime on wrestler intros. Most wrestler intros should take 30 to 45 seconds. WWE takes 3 to 5 minutes, depending on if they put a commercial break in the middle of it. Also, where's Sasha Banks? She should be getting meaningful airtime, and she's not getting any airtime. The fact is, WrestleMania season has been watered down. Part of the reason is WWE just has a lack of true main eventers. It's hard to make wrestlers feel important when they have been 50-50 booked for years. Alex, you want to pluck anything out of that to react to?
The commercial breaks during the entrances is a little annoying. I'll agree with that. Beyond that, let's talk about Sasha. If she's not on the show because they have zero plans for her, they are not going to waste valuable television time on her when quite frankly, right now, she is not on the WrestleMania card. If there's a in pencil WrestleMania card being passed around Vince McMahon's office, I 1000% guarantee you she's not on it. And that's why she's not on TV.
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit to the Sasha Banks story, and that, is leading to her not being a centerpiece at this point. And I'm not even trying to be like, ooh, I got secret information and I can't tell you, and I'm hinting. I'm just like, there has to be. She's just too talented. But, she's done projects outside of WWE. She might have other things going on. Vince McMahon likes the people who are beholden to him for their success. And when you have success outside, I mean, think about how long it took them to acknowledge Batista had a career outside of WWE films. WWE likes their people to get opportunities from them and not become big stars that in a way that isn't because of them. And, she's just been produced haphazardly. And if you go back over the last year and look at some of her performances, she's just seemed in outer space at times. And I don't know what to attribute that to, but it was just weird. Like, it was disconcerting watching her sometimes. Sometimes I felt like I was the only one noticing because everybody else was being a fanboy towards her because she's got her fans and she can do no wrong in some ways. But I think, I don't know what WWE thought of that either. But I think you're right. I mean, I don't think that that she's worked into their plans in a major way right now. I think it's pretty clear who the top matches are going to be. So that's why I just think it's probably multiple things going on right now with her. What I don't want to see, Joe, is them putting her on TV in a way that diminishes her. Like, I don't want to see her, at the heel feuding with Aaliyah right now. Like, I think Sasha's reached a level where when she's around, it should be, she's a big deal in a big match. I think she just gets diminished otherwise.
And that's a great point. You don't want people on TV to be filler. You don't want them on TV for the sake of them being on TV. Like, I almost feel like that's the negative with McIntyre right now, is that they're shoehorning him into this show and he's doing stuff with Moss. And yeah. I actually think Moss has potential, but anyway, to kind of segue from that, he mentioned Corbin. My opinion on Corbin has changed a lot in the last, call it, year and a half. And I think he's actually much more talented than I ever gave him credit for. He probably has one of my favorite move sets as far as some of the stuff he can do in the ring. And a lot of what he does looks good. I understand he's not like a worker to the level of like Bryan Danielson or Seth Rollins or AJ Styles, but not everybody has to be, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But he is believable. And again, a lot of his moves look good. His two finishing moves, I would put up there with anybody's in the company right now, as far as looking believable, like that would end the match. So I'm going to kind of segue that into a question I have for you. Would you continue to book him as a comedy character, or do you see a situation where he could be rehabbed into being taken seriously? Not necessarily as like a top challenger for the world title, but kind of in like that next spot down where he's like, kind of like where Seth was when he was on SmackDown, where he's the second biggest heel on the brand.
Yes. I have been criticized for being a bit of a booster of Baron Corbin, even from pretty close to the day he was called up, and everyone said it was way premature and other people should have been called up instead. Part of that is taking into account, you know, just baking in what Vince McMahon looks for. But I think I think Corbin is on cruise control, doing something he's pretty good at, which is kind of playing a cartoonish character. He's shown acting range when he was down and out, and now it's Happy Corbin. I think he's doing a good job with the gimmick, but it is limiting what could be what you described. Now, I think when they've tested him in this is a big match feel moment, I think he's come up a little bit short of where you'd like him to be. And sometimes that's all it takes to determine your fate. And so I'm an advocate for him to be rehabbed and be a legacy guy who is in more serious. I want to see what he can do if he's asked and if he's motivated and determined to have like a, you know, what is, you know, largely regarded as a four and a quarter star match against another really good wrestler in a feud where he's asked to be serious. I'm curious if he could pull that off. I think he could, but I don't think WWE is sure he can. But, you know, with a lack of stars, to take somebody like him who has size, has good finishing moves, he's one of those guys who's generally in the right place at the right time. He's got pride in what he does. I mean, he's, you know, he's defended the WWE style on social media. And, you know, said, well, if you, you know, I don't think it's exact words, but he says, if you drop some of my matches in New Japan and, you know, add everything to that, people would add, you know, add a star and a half to my matches. If I was doing exactly what I'm doing, but in that context of, you know, where the, you know, the in a more, you know, cool and trendy environment. So yeah, I'm not convinced he would come through, because I am thinking of some, you know, just emotions I had watching his matches, thinking, ah, that's like a half star less than it needed to be. And it still seems like he's a little bit going through the motions, too comfortable and not just seeming determined to take it to the next level. And so that's why I hedge a little bit, but I'd like to see them try it. I think he's one of the better options that they have as a veteran on the roster. And then of course, hesitation is, can you go from Happy Corbin to being taken seriously? And does WWE have it in them to even tell that story?
Yeah, that's where my thing is too. I actually think he's going to have the opportunity to do what you're talking about, because I do think this is going to lead to him and McIntyre at WrestleMania. And despite the fact that he'll be the Happy Corbin character, I do think that McIntyre is the perfect opponent that he could possibly have that four-star match you're talking about.
Yeah. I hope that is a surprise of the night at WrestleMania. You know, I think that's where they're going, and if they do, I hope everybody's pleasantly surprised by what they deliver in that match.
Me too.
Looking over Joe's email. I mean, obviously we disagree on Sammy being a waste of airtime. I mean, if you love Sammy and you just think he deserves better, that's fine. But I mean, there comes a point where you just have to embrace and appreciate what he's doing in the context that he's in and how good he is at doing it. All right, let's see. Maybe just one more here and we'll wrap up. I already read this one. Let's see. We'll do this one. So James from San Antonio just says, "Hey, Wade, I appreciate all the great content. I literally, all caps, laughed out loud when Aaliyah tapped, proving she is a fluke and can't win in a conventional way. What a way to build a baby face. Why does WWE like to make their baby faces look stupid?" Well, that is a broad question with many answers, but I will defend this finish, which was she went for a rope break. A rope break didn't count. If it weren't for the Natalya special rules in this match, Natalya would have had to let go of the hold. And in theory, the match would have continued and Aaliyah might have had a chance. It was only the special rules. It wasn't a standard match that she lost. So they gave her an out, Alex. Now, it's not to say that we're to believe she's on Natalya's level, but they did give her an out here. And I think it was, purposeful.
I defend the finish too. Again, my only complaint about that match was, like I said before, I felt like we were bait and switched a little bit with the Dungeons rules thing, and I was expecting something different than what we got. But I'm fine with it. Aaliyah was, they weren't building her as a babyface. That's kind of silly if you look at what's actually been going on. I mean, I was hoping for better from her, but I did expect when the flukes were taken out that she would lose. I mean, come on. As much as they don't necessarily treat Natalya this way, she is a legacy star. I mean, she is credible. That does bring me to a question I have for you though. And I've wondered this for a while. In the Attitude Era and previous to that, and even beyond that, in no DQ matches, rope breaks still counted when people had submissions on. When did they stop doing that?
Clarify what you mean. Rope breaks still counted.
I wish I could think of an example of a match off the top of my head. But there were no DQ matches in every main event of every pay-per-view during the Attitude Era and even slightly thereafter. And when... we'll use Jericho as an example. Jericho would put the Walls of Jericho on a heel, and the heel got to the ropes, and it broke up the hold. When did they stop that in an ODQ match?
Well, I don't...
That is relatively new.
It's funny you bring that up. I didn't even realize that. Maybe I'm just too cynical about consistency of wrestling rules to pay that much of attention or notice that level of consistency one era to the next. But... to me, if you don't break at 5, then you should be DQ'd. But if it's no DQ, you're a fool if you break up, if you let go, even though your opponent's in the rope. So this rule makes more sense to me. I guess that's my initial thought.
It does make more sense. I'm just curious where, when they decided to change that.
I don't know, when someone brought up at a booking meeting, why are people breaking in the ropes? Because it makes no sense. You can't get DQ'd.
You're probably right. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
I mean, know we've been doing this for 25 years, but...
I'm all for introducing logic when someone goes, we've been doing it this way for a long time, but this makes no sense. Why are we doing it this way? So I applaud that kind of updating of thinking. Alex, anything else from SmackDown that you want to bring up before we wrap up here? Because we talked about Sonya Deville and the McMahon statement. We talked about the New Day, Los Lotharios tag match, the sit-down interview with Reigns, Natalya, Aaliyah, In Zayn, Corbin, Cesaro, the Goldberg sit-down in the main event. Yeah, I mean, I think we covered everything.
Do you want to talk about what the Usos are going to do with the headgear they stole from the Viking Raiders, or do you care less than I do?
Well, I probably care less than you do, but go ahead. I mean,
I'm totally kidding.
Oh, okay. All right. No, I thought you had.
I just don't understand why they took their head stuff. But anyway.
How are you going to tell a WWE story between those two teams unless you do that?
Because reasons.
Yeah.
Other than that, No. we covered everything. Again, great main event. Good show overall. We got to talk about Corbin and Los Lotharios, so I'm happy about that. The only person that was missing from this show tonight that I cared about was Sheamus, and I know you like Sheamus a lot too. So
yeah, but he held a flag at a race.
Whatever.
He waved a flag. Yeah. I wish they were doing more Sheamus this WrestleMania season. I am bummed out about that. By the way, over at ProWrestling.net, the early results of their SmackDown poll, the show is getting 50% thumbs up, 16% thumbs down, 33% thumbs in the middle. So that's probably pretty good for SmackDown these days. What is that? 16? Yeah, about a 3-1 margin, thumbs up versus thumbs down. And the number one vote getter was average show, but 20% gave it an A and 30% a B. So, yeah, I mean, it depends on what you're focusing on. But yeah, this was a good episode of SmackDown that kind of snuck up on you. And of course, you have to be willing to set aside your resentment that Happy Corbin is a character and Madcap Moss is telling bad jokes and Sami Zayn isn't portrayed more seriously, and just, you know, look on the bright side of what they're doing with what they're asked to do. And if you can do that, there were some good things here before the main event. Small victories. Alex, thanks a lot. PW Torch, search PW Torch in your podcast app. Learn wrestling history. And there's, you know, you don't have to love all seven shows throughout the week. You're welcome to. You're invited to. But there's going to be, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shows on that lineup that are going to be, you know, appointment listening for you. So if you haven't done that yet, search PW Torch and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, including the new PW Torch 90s Past Cast with Alex and Patrick discussing a 30 years ago this week Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter back issue. And yes, I'm putting myself out there by having those back issues available for people like you, Alex, to pick apart my top five future star lists and such things with the benefit of hindsight, although you would argue it didn't take hindsight to know better.
Oh, no. It didn't. Not that one. Sorry.
That's all right.
And you'll appreciate this week because there's a couple things, but I actually went out of my way to try to defend one of your stances this week, but it was tough sledding.
Well, I appreciate the effort. I look forward to listening this weekend. All right, great. Thanks to all our callers. Thanks to our listeners. Thank you, Alex. And we'll talk to everybody next time.
Have a good one, Wade.